I'm quite intrigued by this Jade Goody situation. I know this is a very timely, and maybe by the time people hear this, who knows what may have happened, but the idea that this girl has lived her whole life in front of the television, or most of her life, and is now supposedly dying in front of the cameras as well, and having her wedding televised for a lot of money. And I just wondered, what is it, a tragedy or is it a circus?
She says that she's doing, she's gone on record to say that all that she's doing, the TV stuff, the photos, it's all being done so that she can have enough money for her children when she's gone, because I don't know what their father's situation is. Yeah. And so I suppose whether that's, you can't say that's an excuse, because actually that's a good idea.
It's funny, because she must have an awful lot of money.
I remember her saying in the papers that she once had to employ an accountant to sort out all her parking fines, because she just thought, right, I'll just park. And so she never really bought tickets, so what she accumulated tickets, and then she had to employ an accountant to sort out all of her parking fines. So I don't know if she's the greatest in terms of, you know, wisest in terms of how she spent her money, so how much she has left. Don't know, but I'm sure.
I just get the impression she's someone that sort of needs to have her life. It's almost she's got the bug, and has to continue, even though it's a negative thing that she's going through.
But probably from that series of Big Brother, which she didn't win, did she?
No,
she got quite close to the end. But no, I mean the original one, which she that's brought to fame. She didn't win it, but she's the only person you remember from that series. Remember the winner from that series. So she obviously got this desire to be up there, and she's in a sense been successful in that sense.
It's interesting that there is a school in America now. You know how you have theatre schools, you have all these dance schools. There now is a school that trains people for reality TV applications. So it's basically how to accentuate the oddnesses in your character so as to get on to reality TV shows. So it's obviously been seen as right. People that are attention-seeking with maybe a lack of charisma or talent or whatever that X factor. Those that don't have the X factor.
She could be a role model, couldn't she?
She could. In many ways, what she's done is that she's taken her personality. She hasn't really changed it, but she's utilised it so as to gain.
Well, I think other people have utilised it for. I think Max Clifford, publicist, and people like that have actually seen the way to utilise. Yeah.
Well, I mean, not to
be manipulated then.
Well, no, I think she's
just. I thought it's the most manipulated, managed.
I think. I mean, the way in which, I mean, not at all to disrespect what's going on, but the way in which it was revealed on one day, the fact that, you know, she wasn't going to be healed, or the doctor said, look, you've got 3 or 4 months, and then 2 or 3 days later, she announced the engagement. You can see that from a Max Clifford PR paper kind of view. Yeah. If all those things happened at once, it would be someone like Max Clifford would say, right, release that bit of information that day, release that bit of information the next day. So that's not necessarily Jade's fault. That's just the PR person going, let's get the best PR money.
About the reality, but the fact that this is someone that's dying, and I did see a glimpse of it yesterday for the first time on Living TV, I think, and you saw her lying in bed, being woken up at 6 in the morning. You actually do, the camera's there her whole day. You saw her bald in bed, she hasn't got any makeup on, just chatting to the camera as though it was the most normal thing in the world. Then you see her going to the hospital and having chemo, you know, with all the pain and the sickness. She's still been filmed doing that. Why?
Some people say that it's to help others go into the same issue, which, you know,
I
suppose if you were in that situation, to watch someone else going through it with you could be of use. But, you know, so that's one way of looking at it, whether that's the main focus or whether that's a side benefit to it.
So I think many more women apparently have gone for tests.
Really?
Now, as a result, 20% up or something as a result.
Something they do say, and this is no slight on her. I don't know her lifestyle, but I know when I saw her with that programme, Big Brother, her mouth was so unsavoury, you know, where she was verbalising that other Indian lady.
Well, she's no different to anyone else.
No, she isn't. Yeah. But I know when you go for those tests, they ask you about your lifestyle, and if you're a married woman and you've got your one partner, they're so pleased with that because they know there's not so much chance of cancer. Yeah, it is. It's
lifestyle,
and sad to say, her lifestyle would bring in an unhealthy lifestyle. You know, God forbid me being judgmental on her, but. You know, where I saw her at that time, and I'd not seen her from that time to this. And to see such a sad, sad situation now. Was that life? Was that, would she have chosen that way of life? You know, to see how she's ended up now.
What's interesting about what's interesting about that, coupled with the fact that there's been the rise of people going for the tests, is a good sign to show that actually Jade isn't an anomaly in terms of how she lived her life. A lot of people live exactly like Jade. And that's, and that's not
the facts that you're talking about are becoming much more widespread.
They are.
So I think, in a sense, that's a good outcome.
There are...
That a lot of young girls are realising that there is...
This is a unique situation, that someone has got a death sentence and is dying. And I just wondered about the idea of death, society's view of death. I mean, Chris, I mean, do you think it's been trivialised, death? I mean, death is, for us as Christians, it's a big thing.
Well, I think if you don't have any positive faith, then there are a number of ways you can treat death. One is to ignore it. Another is to treat it like a joke. And another is to treat it as an opportunity to make a lot of money. Now, which it is in this instance, of course, I wouldn't know. But nonetheless, you know, if people have no living faith, they have no hope. So therefore, they have to trivialise death in one way or another, hoping that it will literally go away, which, of course, is the one thing that won't. But it is, to my mind, it's a sad reflection on the way our people have become, that something like this can become of such mega interest in, to the media, because that surely tells us that people are taken up with trivial matters. And I think it's connected with the way in which folks like to live out their own fantasies through personalities, whether they're footballers or film stars or personalities, you know, per se. So, I mean, to my mind, it is a sinister reflection on the way society's gone, because it's become godless.
But on the other hand, maybe it's an opportunity now, the subject becoming very much in the forefront. And you've got Terry Pratchett as well, who, you know, he's got Alzheimer's, and he's an atheist. And he's talking about the lights just going out eventually and stuff like that. Maybe it's time for a bit more open dialogue on the subject. Whether that'll happen or not, I don't know, because we seem to be living in a time where atheism, as well as the extreme Islam and all that, are, seem to be taking very centre stage at the moment.
It's weird, because it's soulless, isn't it? Atheism simply says your lights go out. There's no hope, there's no aspiration.
Right.
It's more the idea that you
have one life. It's the purpose of life, or that life is there to serve you. So the positive spin that a lot of atheists put on it is, this is my life. This is my one chance at it, so I'm going to make sure I have a really good time and do well in it, sort of thing.
But when you're dying.
Exactly. But I think the weird thing about death is we're one of the first generations to really, really not care enough about it. Because even throughout the Bible, everyone's scared of death. You know, whether they're for God or against God, you know. And even those that were against God, they would see people that were for God, and the first thing they would freak out about is judgment and death. Whereas there's no fear of death anymore with a lot of people. It's something that a lot of people hope will happen suddenly, so that it can surprise them almost. Whereas what we're seeing with people like Jay and other people with debilitating diseases is that a lot of the time you have a period of time where you're going in between life and death, and that's what people fear, because that's when you have to start questioning and thinking. People would rather, in a sense, just get hit by a car, have no opportunity to think about it, because it's just sudden.
Most people do think that they're going to be light switched out.
And what you say about the trivialisation of death, actually, it came up the other way, and death actually makes it more serious. The whole effect of actually, right to this moment, Jade Goody has been living her life, being in the public eye, being successful, getting the money in, and you could say, from our angle, being Christians, we think, oh, that's a selfish lifestyle. A lot of people are kind of living that kind of that's aspiration, to be selfish. But now she knows she's going to die, and yet she still wants the money, not for herself. For the first time, you can see perhaps there's an altruistic motive. She actually wants to serve and to give, maybe in a sort of twisted way, but at least that's coming out. Maybe death has actually put that in her her mind in a way that nothing else could.
So it's producing something positive, but then she must still feel what's going to happen to her. I just wonder what she's been told, what her philosophy is. What is the philosophy of a typical Jade-type person regarding to death?
I think the typical philosophy is my, and with many people, Christians and non-Christians, is my life centres around my family and my children, which is not a bad thing. The Bible talks about the importance of being, you know, mothers, fathers, that sort of thing. But some people, they put their family on a spiritual pedestal to the point that it blocks out God, so that the rest of their life is ensuring that when they die, their parents will remember them as good parents. Yeah, as opposed to when they're dying, going, right, I need to know God because there's something after. And so it's still maintained. Everything is still about earth. It's still about your family. It's still about your people. It's still about serving the people
so
that you care about.
Reconciled to the fact that, in a way, they'll live out their lives through their kids. That they've gone, but their kids survive. So somehow they survive through their kids.
The hope. Well, more that the hope is that their kids will carry on the beacon, that they'll have good lives, and that they'll remember their parents in a positive way, and that, you know, their parents have been able to, even though they're dead, have been able to have supported them, you know, financially and, you know, with the rest of the thing. And that's not a bad thing at all. That's not a bad thing at all. But there is a point at which you sit there and go, actually, that's assuming that there's no consequence for anything after death. You can almost become blinded to, as Christians, the spiritual reality of, but what if there's something for you as well.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. What if you, by wanting to, by looking at death purely as an earthly thing and serving your earthly family, is there a chance that you could blind yourself to a spiritual reality because you're too focused and worried about your kids and what you're leaving behind?
Yeah. A friend of mine was an RAF chaplain, and he used to have some very interesting encounters with people, because being a nonconformist, he used to pick up all the non-Catholic, non-Anglicans. But also, as well as nonconformists, he'd pick up all the atheists. And he used to interview them. And during the interview, he'd say, well, I just want you to know how much, you being an atheist, I want you to know how much I respect your faith. And they would say, well, I don't have any faith. He said, oh, yes, you do. He said, it takes a lot more faith to believe what you do than to believe what I do. You believe there's no God, don't you? Well, yes. Okay, well, just tell me about the God you don't believe in. And then you'd get all this stuff coming out that had been fed by school days, television programs, CoronationStreet.com and all the rest of it. Garbage. Then he would say at the end of it, well, that's very interesting, because that probably makes me an atheist too, because I don't believe in that God either. Can I tell you about the God I do believe in? And many that came into his office as atheists didn't leave as atheists. But he would then say to them, and I thought this was really classic, he'd say, I want you to know that I do respect your atheism very much. And if something terrible happened to you while you were here in my charge, I want you to know that I would give you an atheist's funeral. So there won't be any hymns, there won't be any prayers, there'll be no reference to God at all. This is my solemn promise to you. We'll get a couple of friends to just say what a nice person you were and all that, and maybe someone to read a favourite poem, but we won't refer to God at all. And he told me that the expression on their face was priceless, from which he concluded that there are many people who like to live without God, but not too many that want to die without him. And I think that's quite telling.
Thinking sort of this death thing, do you think maybe Christians should be, because through the Jade, going back to the Jade thing, you know, the whole thing is about someone virtually dying, if not in front of the cameras, but sort of almost in front of the cameras. Death should be, we should be talking out. We should be saying, you know, what Louis was saying, there is a judgment, you know. There can only be one truth, either there is a God or there isn't. But I don't hear a Christian response to this, something that is quite high up in you know, the world's media at the moment.
It's an opportunity, really, isn't it? A high a very high-profile situation like that should be an opportunity. Hey, we want Jade to be saved.
That'd be lovely if some. Okay, maybe that's something what people should pray, that God would put some person beside her that could speak and to really let her know that she can. That would be so wonderful, because if somebody could go beside her, there must be somebody she knows that knows the Lord.
Yeah.
And if only that, we could pray that if only that person or persons go beside her, speak, you know, the truth, you know, because we know that we've acknowledged, you know, that we are sinners, we've asked Jesus into our lives, and we know we're safe in him, and we know that we live our lives differently, and we know that we go to him when we've gone, and that's the ultimate. And maybe that's something we should pray, that that young woman could be saved at the end of the day. And what a witness that would be, because her lifestyle would change so much. She would not have to swear anymore. She would, her appearance and her everything about her would be so different.
So you're saying not just being saved, but being healed?
Yeah. Why not? We know God could heal her.
Yeah.
We know God could heal. God could heal her overnight or in a split second.
A lot of the reason, guys say, a lot of the reason the church doesn't really do anything when things like that happen is it. Sounds weird, but wait till I explain it. It reveres people above God. There's this idea that, right, well, she's in this situation. Let's just let the last few months be peaceful. Let's not trouble her mind. Let's not upset, you know, which I'm not criticising. I'm not judging. But the reality is this guy was saying, look, if your child was walking across the train track and a train came up and I decided because I didn't want people, I didn't want to shout, I didn't want to scream, I didn't want people to, didn't want to rock the boat, I didn't want people to think I was mad, I just let the train... Yeah. Then you'd say I was evil for not for putting myself above. And it's the same. Mm. We are worried. We don't want to tell people the spiritual reality for fear that it might upset. God said, I will comfort you, but he comforts those that mourn. He has to, he breaks to heal. Mm. And we don't want to do that anymore, especially if it's in those last moments. We want it to be peaceful. But what we forget is that we're giving a month or two of peace before an eternity of not peace. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I think it takes Christians to be bold and go, look, I'm going to say something you don't necessarily want to hear, but it is the truth and it can save you.
It's really important that also applies to your children.
Mm.
Yes. You know, you're afraid to speak too straight to your children about their salvation for fear of losing their affection.
Yeah.
And, you know, the point you're making is absolutely valid. You know, do I regard them less highly than I should by refusing to tell them the truth that can bring the greatest blessing into their life?
I think you can prove your love for somebody, especially your own children or anybody that's not even related to you. I knew a young man, sad to say, he didn't know whether he's male or female. He had never ever kissed a man or a woman. He used to dress up in women's clothes. He was so mixed up, and I did counselling with him, with this other pastor. And through the few years of that, he had developed cancer, and he had many lumps cut out of his body, and it got to lymph nodes. But through his illness, he said this to me. He said, this illness has got me closer to God, Maria. And I said, wonderful. I said, because I tell you, through this illness, you've been more of a man. You've shown more of a strength as a man. You've acted as a man. And he said, I know I have.
But that's only happened because someone has been witnessing to him.
Exactly.
As well.
That was helping. Mm. But I believe I know it's not as if God would use that deliberately, but God would not waste that either. Yeah. And that young guy, I do believe that he did go to heaven. And he had a stroke and he couldn't speak to me, but his mother spoke to me on his behalf. And he just knew that through his illness, he'd got closer to the Lord.
I think we do need moments in our lives, don't we? That do make us stop and think. As Colin was saying, you know, you see instances now where she's thinking about her children, she's thinking about, you know, making this money to leave to them, to give them some security, and how they use it, obviously, you know, when they're 18 will be up to them. But also I did hear sort of this morning that she'd had two Bibles by her bedside in hospital, and that she has been asking questions. So she has got to that point where, it has been, I don't know if it's, you know, the man that's been going to be doing the wedding, or this chap that we heard about that was, you know, talking to her, and I don't know. But he, no, we don't, want to mention names. But she has been asking questions, and so you do get to a point. Yes, it's good for people to witness to her and to talk to her, but it's got to come from that desire within herself to be asking those questions at that point, you know, as she finds herself, you know, with this situation.
Hosea 6:1 says, come, let's go back to the Lord. He has hurt us, but he will heal us. He has wounded us, but he will bandage our wounds. Most of the reasons why people pray and it doesn't happen is because they're praying against the will of God, because they want comfort. Sometimes, like Jacob, got rid of everything in Jacob's life to send to his brother Esau. And it wasn't until he was alone in a dark place in a field that he wrestled and truly met with God. And again, David said, was it Psalm 119:71? It was good for me to suffer so I would learn your demands. But we don't believe that anymore. We just want God to do nice things for us. We want God to help us by not testing us, not breaking us, just by whispering something gently in our ear that we'll vaguely remember, and then give us something nice. But actually, a lot of the time, God has to break things that we cling to so that we can cling to him. Because if we cling to both, you know, no man can serve two masters, Jesus said. You know, you cannot serve God and money. He will either hate one or love the other. If you want to serve God truly, he must break every other master in your life that you cling to. And that's not me saying that, oh, God has given this disease, nothing like that, not at all. But that, wherever you are, do not curse where your life is going and say, God has deserted me. Sometimes God puts you in places so that he can reach out and heal you, or so he can reach out and be yours. Because, you know, better to have two eyes, one eye in heaven, sorry, than one eye in hell. Sometimes God calls you to change, and he has to break things in you so that you can be his. Because it's better to be in that form with him. Does that make sense?
It needs Jay Goody going back to her to actually, you know, to be approached by someone. The problem is that she's living her whole life in front of the camera. She won't have any time. The whole time will be used up with a director or a publicist saying, well, do this, do that.
As part of it, I think at the same time, you know, Jade's one of these people where it's almost become second nature. Do you know what I mean? I mean, if one of us were told we have to be on TV for 24 hours, we'd freak out and there'd be a lot of preparation. But this is someone that's done this for 4 or 5 years. She knows what to say, when to say it, where to go. And, you know, I'd guess there'd be little direction. And also, you know, they do understand, it's, you know, they're not doing this, I don't think, with a malicious heart. And I don't think they'll make Jade, as it were, work for the camera. I do think the cameras will work around her. You know, they won't get her to cancel appointments because they want to film something. Do you know what I mean? It's not like that. So I don't think Jade will be too time-consuming because, A, she knows what she's doing when it comes to cameras, and, B, the people running the project, I genuinely believe, aren't doing anything malicious and will just want to just capture what's going on. Just got to pray, really, haven't you?
But how she lives and how she is, I suppose society, and I have to be one of those people that puts my hand up, we can judge people so easily. And in this instance, I believe, like Steve was saying about praying, I believe it's caused a lot of people to lift Jade up in prayer. And so I believe that God works in his wonderful way in this situation that we cannot see. But I just feel it's changed my attitude. So therefore, hopefully it changes other people's attitude. Because, I mean, we're the Lord's, and he says, don't judge, but we do. And I suppose that's taught me a lesson that you don't judge these people, you lift them to the Lord. I just believe that that is what is happening, and there must be lots and lots of people praying for her.
Like if you look at like the Sun and all the big sort of newspapers, if you look at them 2 years ago, and comedians as well, you know, it talks about speaking curses against people, and Jade Goody is someone that has been cursed by mouth and heart by a lot of people that would even call themselves Christians. And now she's in this position, and people like papers like The Sun, you know, calling her a hero. And I think there's an element of which, you know, even the secular world is going, we have been horrifically out of order, this individual that, despite, you know, her lifestyle and her general personality, is a human being who is now in dire need.
Right. There's making a martyr out of her. Secular martyr.
But I think it's also, at the same time, it's the papers, and I think it's people generally going, I now feel really bad about some of the things I've thought or said about Jade Goody to my friends, or in a paper.
But the whole thing's been manipulated by the media. Right. The media tells us when we should feel good and when we should feel bad.
No, I think she's just been a legitimate target. She was a legitimate target.
They're a reflection, in a way, about how people are, in a way. They do manipulate on one hand.
When someone's down, when they're up and they're healthy, that's the time to have a go at them. But actually, when they're dying, you don't feel you got the spirit to do that anymore.
And I think that's what a lot of people suddenly realise. I think there's an element of guilt in a lot of people going, do you know what I mean? I think what you're saying about prayer, I think for Christians, our reaction should be to pray. And if any of us have thought or said, which I'm sure some of us have, not like cursed or anything, but just gone, Jade, what a foolish person. That's our, the Bible says, repent of anything that you say in your heart, your mind, because your words do have an effect. And I think
she had presented herself from the very start as a very thick-skinned individual, who, if you like, as I said, could be a legitimate target for people because she was thick-skinned and she could take it. So he was a perfect person to use, and she was enjoying
a willing victim.
Yeah, absolutely, and making money from it. And
we as Christians should never have been strung along by that, though. We should never, and that's the problem. Yeah. We judge people by what the papers say about them, and we forget, or it gets. We go, oh yeah, well God can save her. Oh yeah, God does love her. But how has she said this? Oh, she's done this. How stupid! And that's the problem. We let the papers and the media become our foreground. Yeah. The Bible become our background for people, and that needs to switch if we're ever going to be able to. Why? How many of us were all praying for her now? How many of us prayed for her when she came out of the Big Brother house? Yeah. That's the tragedy. Yeah. It's taken this for the church to be moved to care about a person, and I think that's a real challenge.
And it's like, if she does come through, that the church doesn't then start to manipulate her.
No.
Because high-profile converts tend to be messed about a lot. But, if that actually happened, it'd be great if she came through, and we should just pray for that.
Well, I think the challenge is, to pray for Jade, but also to identify and to realise all people are human, whether they're thick-skinned, thin-skinned, really clever, really not so clever. And pray for people all the time and not let what the papers say about a person affect you, because even the papers change their minds when someone's ill. Yeah. And the reality is, the Bible says that we are all, our hearts are deceitfully wicked, beyond cure. We're all ill in some way. Get praying.
Right, yeah. Jade is in our prayers.
I think actually going to the earliest stage, where we turned against her, the whole supposed racist issue and everything. I think it was more to do with class than I think it was a class thing than a race thing. I think she felt a bit stupid, as against the Indian lady who was quite bright. So I think even at the time it was more of a class issue than a race issue. It was turned into a race issue because the language.
Reality TV. It's still, they show you what they want to show you as well. Exactly, let's not go into all that.
To have clear villains and clear.
That's right.
It's all good TV. Good TV.
And that's the problem is that we make out clear villains, and then the villain suddenly gets ill, and suddenly we go, there aren't clear villains in life.
It's very often the other way around with the papers. They'll put someone on a pedestal for a long time, and then when they've run out of things nice to say, or they'll knock them off the pedestal. And this is an example of the other way around.
It happens with humble
them all the time, and then when they're in a situation, Beckham, put them on the pedestal.
David Beckham was way up on the pedestal. Yeah. Then he committed a misdemeanor on the football field, and he got himself sent off, and we lost the World Cup as a result. And the papers, they virtually put out a fatwa on him. a secular fatwa, if it was possible to do that. The papers absolutely hated him, and they forced us to hate him. I hated him. I don't know why. I mean, why should I hate him? But the press made me do it. Then he became a hero again.
Manipulated by Daily Mail.
But a year later...
Other papers are available.
A year later, he scores a goal in another important game, and then the paper said it's okay to love him again.
And all right, fair enough. Got the thumbs up. Yeah. All right, he's all right now.
It's the problem, isn't it? We should take the papers with a pinch of salt.
Absolutely.
And the Bible with the truth. Exactly. But we've gone the other way around, and we take the papers as truth and the Bible with a pinch of salt. We know he could save them, but he probably isn't. That's true.
Yeah.
If he wants to save her, or him, or whoever, he will. It doesn't matter if the paper doesn't like him. God loves him.
Absolutely. Okay. Good. Well, it always goes to a pregnant pause. No final comments.
Just on the subject of Christian mission, I was just thinking of what Maria was saying about getting alongside the young man who's struggling with sexuality and so on, and being there to the end. This is why it's so important for, you know, we can't just have the Billy Grahams and the John Stotts and the people who are talking to mass audiences. We need people in every walk of life who are there at the time, because, you know, all through your life you might not want to talk about these things, but when it comes to a time, you need somebody there who actually is a Christian, who is has that faith, and who can actually lead you. And it's no good having Billy Graham tapes on the side, or, you know, which you can turn to, because that won't speak to them. So it's the people.
Like a Christian nurse context. At this place where Jay Goody is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's not as easy as it was, because we know that, unfortunately, nurses who suggest prayer or anything.
Especially in a high profile case.
Christians that are bold enough to, you know, that we talk about martyrs in terms of, you know, Paul's and everyone in the Bible that have been killed. I believe there is a level of, there are lots of different levels of martyrdom, and if you're willing to give up your job for someone's soul, God honours that. Yeah. If you're willing to get fired for the truth, that's welcome to a level of martyrdom.
It's going to happen a lot more, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's accelerating.
Well, it's biblical as well, isn't it? The church will be persecuted. Christians aren't going to, it's not going to get easier. It's like you've got, if you put all, if unless you have all your hope in God, you will not be able to work for him, because the world won't let you have any.
Tries to squeeze you into its mould.
Exactly.
I think this is where we have to make sure we don't get squeezed in. And as really, to sum up a lot of what we've been saying, is that when we see people doing wrong, pray for their wrong, that they learn to live their lives right. Mm. And obviously, because I remember when I had a young woman behind me, and I stopped at a roundabout, and she was swearing big time at me, a bit like Jade, actually. It was all the full strong stuff. And I got out of the car, and I said, well, she was scared because I'd got out of my car, but I just said, what's your problem? And she's still doing all the, you know, F words at me. And I just said to her, I said, you've got a horrible mouth. You know, and nobody had most probably ever told her that. Mm. She was about 26, she was beautiful, but her mouth let her down. Mm. And
mouth was ugly.
And I believe, her mouth was ugly. And I believe I most probably stopped that girl from getting killed, because she would have haired around the roads, you know, and I'd stopped her, and that might have been for a reason. But the thing was, I did pray for that young woman, and I kept praying for her, and I said, God, you let her see that there's much better life than what she's got. You know, if she can go around, you know, swearing at people and being so disrespectful and so horrible, that she's got to see that she's disrespectful and horrible, that she can change her way of life. And I prayed very much for that young woman. And hopefully, you know, God picked up somewhere there with somebody coming into her life. And I think what we've learning today, pray for those. Yeah. People that are so out of order.
For the unlovable.
Yeah, love the unlovable, pray for the unlovable, and do right by the unlovable as well. And let's face it, when we do what God tells us to do, we're blessed by it.
Mouth is an interesting one, because, you know, Jesus said, out of the mouth the heart speaks, isn't it? And so if you speak a lot with anger and hatred, it's a sign that, you know, there's something there that God wants to heal. And so it's not that we judge people on what they say, but that the Bible does say, you know, you can learn something about where a person's heart is, where a person's relationship is with God, by what's coming out of their mouth. And so sometimes if someone's coming at you really angry, effing and blinding, it's a good sign that the area for them to be praying in is anger, because that's where their heart is at the moment. You know, obviously no one's perfect. You know, there's a story about a guy, a pastor, who was putting some shelves up or something in his church, and some guy, bless him, followed him everywhere. And he said, why? He said, well, I want to see what happens when you hit your thumb. I want to see what you say. Because it's in those moments of sudden pain, the heart speaks. It's interesting, isn't it? It's scary. It's like, oh, what do, if you touch the oven by mistake, what's the first thing that comes out? Is it, oh, or is it a tirade of other things? Do you know what I mean? But it's a really good indication. Yeah. It's a really good indication, you know, out of the mouth, the heart speaks, which is a really dangerous thing. Because if we as Christians are speaking, then we're showing our hearts. If we want to show that we have the heart, you know, that we have a heart full of God, we have to make sure that we're saying is what we say is full of God and right.
Don't we also have to be very careful? We're saying about the media controls us. Mm. And we've picked up on this story about this nurse. But in another article I was reading, she was actually giving out cards for decision. And so you only hear part of the story in the newspaper. Right. And I suppose that comes back to God's gifting to us about having the knowledge and wisdom and to know how to pray into those situations.
We don't always get the full story. There's always a twist according to where the paper's coming from and what the emotions it wants you to sort of stir up.
Old adage, isn't it? Don't let the truth get in the way of a good story. No, that's the basic media attitude, isn't it? Mm.
But it is wrong. It's wrong that you know, we're sort of marginalised in that way.
Yeah.
But it's really looking a bit further into it as well.
Stomachs are rumbling.
Yeah.